Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Monday afternoon, March 10th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Chicago's famed Charlie Trotter restaurant making a comeback. We'll get the details in our next segment, but right now, tariffs remain top of mind. While data this week will include the latest snapshot of inflation and a reading from America's small businesses. We welcome Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at AndrewBush.com based in Charlotte. Andy, thank you for joining us today. And once again, as was the case last week, tariff policy is in the spotlight because even though the tariffs against Canadian and Mexican goods have been largely kicked down the road for yet another month, everyone's still trying to figure out what the end game is here.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem. With President Trump, he states a goal, but he doesn't give us a playbook on how he's going to get there. And that's why things get messy. Over the weekend, President Trump said that, people should potentially get ready for, a recession, or at least he didn't, downgrade it and say, no, it won't happen. So it's that kind of commentary that just is crazy for the markets and something the president shouldn't be talking about at all. But, this is a very different president. We also had China put tariffs on U.S. agricultural products today. And the big thing, of course, is coming April 2nd with the potential for reciprocal tariffs across the world. And we're still not sure what that means.
Now, if I had to take a stab at what the thought process here is, I would imagine if you are Donald Trump and Elon Musk, for that matter, for the last 10 years, people have been saying, no, Donald Trump, you cannot do X, Y, and Z. He goes through anyway and seemingly comes out the victor on the other side, or at least the worst case scenario, as a lot of his critics have said, it never took place. This is his way of thinking, I believe. And the same thing happened with Elon Musk when it came to taking over Twitter. It was the same level of disruption. And I would imagine when Elon Musk's head hits the pillow every night, he would say, you know what? All of those dire warnings about Twitter never came to pass. And I believe they both are of the mind that the United States is such an economic power that we can dictate what we want and people have to meet us and not the other way around.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different this time from a number of standpoints. This is not the 2016 president, Trump that we had. There's probably five key characteristics with him. He thinks that there is zero sum to every negotiation. There's a winner and a loser, right? He believes in economic leverage as a primary tool, tariffs, sanctions, trade deals, right, over military intervention. There's just a lot of disruptive and contradictory foreign policy. So everybody's on their back foot trying to figure out what's going on. I would say this, it's to expect more I think countries have anticipated what President Trump was going to do. They actually listened to what he said on the campaign trail, and they said, okay, we're ready to go. Canada, Ontario, cutting off electricity, but raising electrical prices coming in the United States by 25% is a great example of that. China reacting quickly. So countries aren't sitting back and going, oh my gosh, I'm surprised. They're not. They're acting aggressively towards President Trump and these tariffs. And that's really a question of whether how long the president wants to keep this going, how long he wants to put these things on. That's really the destabilizing force that's impacting the economy. It's impacting uncertainty for businesses, and it's impacting the stock market today.
Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at andrewbush.com, based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, the return of an iconic Chicago restaurant name.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The space formerly occupied by the award-winning Charlie Trotter's restaurant in Chicago is seeing a rebirth. Let's find out what's happening with the help of Ali Marotti, restaurants and retail reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Ali, thank you for joining us today. And it sounds like that pop-up Charlie Trotter's that was run by the Alinea Group a couple of months ago may have passed the audition.
Yeah, you're right. I think he was Dylan Trotter, who is Charlie's son, was maybe getting his feet wet a little bit, and it went well. And now independently, without the Alinea Group, he wants to start doing these kind of one-off dinner series, maybe every couple of weeks at the old Charlie Trotter's in Lincoln Park.
This also seems rather innovative in that if you don't want to take the full plunge into reopening a formerly, world-renowned, Michelin-starred restaurant, that maybe you just do it every now and then as kind of a one-off, and maybe some of these brands above and beyond Charlie Trotter's could survive and even thrive on a pop-up basis when maybe you just don't want to take the full plunge again.
Yeah, it's really interesting because Charlie Trotter, he was such a storied, persona in Chicago. He really helped put the city on the map as far as fine dining goes. And there's a lot of people that, wanted a taste of that, wanted another taste of that. When Dylan teamed up with the Alinea Group for their limited run tasting menu, the wait list was thousands and thousands of people long. So Dylan knows that there is an audience there, but there's also this challenge, right? Like, what do you do? How do you live up to that? So do you give people exactly what his dad was giving them, or do you put your own spin on it? And what is that spin? So I think that's something that Dylan Trotter is still trying to figure out and, playing around with this dinner series that's coming up.
Now, at the same time, I mean, there's a very long list of Charlie Trotter's alums who have gone on to do great things themselves. And then they have their own chef trees as well. And is this an opportunity for some of these chefs to come back and take another bite of the apple?
Yeah, I think it is in a way. Dylan told me that with the dinner series, he wants to feature perhaps some Trotter alumni, perhaps other younger local chefs, maybe wine adjacent people. He said he's got an interest from chefs across the country and around the world to come participate in these things. And he told me that the series is set to begin in early April, but we don't know, how long it might run, who all will be involved. Those are all developing parts of the story.
And on top of that, if you do the if you do the pop-up version of the restaurant, I would imagine it's nowhere near as stressful as running a place like a Charlie Trotter's on a nightly basis. I mean, that was Charlie Trotter's life. That consumed him. That defined his personality. And for better or for worse, depending on what time of the day you caught him.
Yeah, I think you're right, too. And the other thing to remember here is that this building has been in the family. The family's owned it, for a while now. And for a lot of restaurants that own the buildings that they operate in, that ends up being a real lifeline for them. We saw that during the pandemic. Obviously, there are still expenses. These buildings in particular were built in 1881, and Dylan had to do a lot of work to kind of get them back up and running. But yeah, you know, there is, I think he has a little bit of a landing pad there.
Now, this is this. Now, Allie, I'm going to fully cop. This may very well be a dumb guy question. So please humor me and my dumb guy question. That is, looking at pictures of Charlie Trotter from the 80s, I said to myself, holy cow. He looks an awful lot like Jeremy Allen White's character in The Bear. Now, the fact that this TV show is such a hit, and it has probably brought more people into the Chicago culinary scene just because it is such a locally focused show and it really does speak the language, is this another case of striking while the iron is hot? Now that there is this national interest in Chicago's culinary scene thanks to this show.
That's a really great, that's a funny thing you bring up. I had not noticed the resemblance there, but you
thank you
right
for humoring me, by the way.
You could be right in that, you know, there is a lot of interest in the Chicago dining scene beyond just, you know, the Italian beef and the deep dish pizza that I think is synonymous with Chicago, right? We know that the Bear drives culinary traffic, culinary tourism to Chicago, and that is really a trend that Charlie Trotter started. So you do have that going on, but I think Dylan also, you know, his dad's restaurant ran at a time that was completely different for the dining world, right? But not everybody was going in taking a picture with their iPhone of every course they ate and posting it immediately online. That has its pros and cons, right, if you ask chefs about that. But what Dylan wants to do is really make sure that his dad's legacy is kind of carried into the digital age because it didn't have that so much before, right? So he's thinking about that. He's hearing from younger chefs around the country that are saying, hey, you know, we were kids when your dad's restaurant was running, but his cookbooks are inspiring us now. So I think it is something where he is thinking about, you know, Dylan's thinking about what can he do to further his dad's legacy in that way, too.
Allie Marotti, restaurants and retail reporter, Crane Chicago Business.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The social media platform X is experiencing significant issues today. Let's check in with Jerry Irvine, CIO of Prescient Solutions and member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force based in Chicago. Jerry, thank you for joining us today. And, you know, Jerry, I've been around the block so long now. I remember when X was called Twitter, and when Twitter had a problem, they had the fail whale, that graphic of a whale being lifted up by a bunch of birds to indicate that Twitter was having some serious problems. Today a day to bring back the fail whale? What's causing the problems on X, the everything app?
Yeah, they may want to bring out a whole pod of whales. It's having all kinds of problems. This first one started at somewhere around 4 a.m. our time, and the last one now has lasted for over 2 hours. With as many as 40,000 reports of outages. So it's a major issue. Of course, there's no information as to what or why the system is down. But, you know, you can only speculate with all of the attention that Elon is getting these days that, you know, potentially somebody is out there targeting it. The NFL draft being today, there are a lot of NFL fans who are very disappointed and unable to check their messages. And it looks like Blue Sky is actually getting a lot of benefit from their outage.
Yeah, I was going to say, with all of the consternation over what X/Twitter is like today, the user experience and what it is being used for, it is still a big tool in the world of sports. And with NFL free agency starting today, a lot of the beat writers are starting to reveal some rumors and reported signings and things like that. And it's a place where a lot of people get a lot of information. And as you say, if X is not operating, everyone will gravitate to the competition, at least today, to get their information. But you also bring up a very interesting point too, Jerry, and that is the person who owns Twitter, Elon Musk, is at the right hand of the president right now, and that does make his social media app a very attractive target for hackers and for organized national cyber disruption teams.
Absolutely, and much like he's doing in his current role, when he took over Twitter, he fired a lot of people. So there are rumors right now that perhaps there's not enough people there that take care of it. Although just recently he did hire a lot of new cybersecurity personnel. So I imagine they're working pretty hard today. But the question is really, what's going on? Why is it happening? And does it have anything to do with the political scene that's going on today?
Jerry Irvine, CIO of Prescient Solutions and member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force based in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead, why the popularity of lab-grown diamonds is rising, plus suggestions from our Monday stock picker.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
This is Haley Hansen. Hundreds of food service and hospitality workers at Northwestern University are on strike.
The Supreme Court has agreed to decide whether state and local governments can enforce laws banning conversion therapy for children. More people are choosing lab-grown diamonds for engagement rings. It's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get a pair of ideas from an investing pro. WBBM Business. The markets are lower. The Dow is down 685 points. The NASDAQ is down 710. The S&P 500 is down 145. We have 60 degrees right now in Chicago. Under mostly sunny skies, it's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. Hundreds of workers employed by the Compass Group at Northwestern University are on strike today.
In a statement, Northwestern University calls Compass a trusted partner, adding, quote, "We hope for a swift and equitable resolution." Unite Here Local 1, the labor union representing some 500 cooks, cashiers, baristas, dishwashers, and caterers at the university, says many are long-term workers who have served students, professors, and staff for decades. UK-based Compass Group, one of the largest food service companies in the world, took over food service and hospitality operations at Northwestern University back in 2018. Haley Hansen, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Supreme Court justices have decided to hear a challenge to the state of Colorado's ban on conversion therapy for minors. The high court has declined to hear similar challenges in the past, including as recently as 2023. The panel will decide if the law violates the First Amendment rights of a counselor who deals with patients considering a gender change. The Supreme Court is expected to give a green light to Republican-led states' efforts to ban gender-affirming care for minors. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. The markets are lower and losing altitude today. We're joined by Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at B. Riley Financial, based in New York. Art, thank you for joining us today. The sell-off continues, and what are markets reacting to specifically today?
Well, I don't know that there's anything new specifically today. I do know that over the weekend, President Trump, when asked about the potential for a recession, didn't push back on that much and, you know, continued with the thought process of the short-term pain for long-term gain. So I think that was a bit of a disappointment for anyone that thought that there might be a Trump put in this market, meaning, you know, any of his proposals and tariffs, you know, might get a timeout, if you will, if the market, you know, continue to go down. I think that's one piece of the puzzle. But I think in general, Rob, this is an investment environment where, with the amount of uncertainty we have, whether it's around how much federal spending we're going to cut, how much we're going to limit immigration, and certainly where the goal line will be for tariffs, I think both investors and folks that run publicly traded companies with that kind of uncertainty are just pulling back and not wanting to make any risky moves here. And that's very evident when we see the kind of investing that we've seen both today and for all of this month. Anything that's technically risky is being sold, like the NASDAQ composite, and anything that is safer, things like healthcare and staples and utilities, are being bought here and outperforming the S&P 500.
The bull run in the market is about 3 years old, and the economic expansion out of that initial COVID-19 shock is almost 5 years old. And a lot of the growth we have seen in equities has been kind of pegged to that sustained growth we have seen since then. If the White House says there's probably going to be a recession, more or less for our own good, because the economy will be more resilient and stronger on the other side, what does that mean for an equity market that has been built on this sustained growth for the past couple of years?
Well, that depends on the path of getting to that, you know, the better for the long run. And if the concept is we're going to bring back manufacturing in the United States, and we're going to do that through the avenue of tariffs, I would say that that's not going to be very productive. Tariffs, unfortunately, in this day and age, aren't going to increase our productivity. We certainly don't want to go back to making textiles. We left that over 100 years ago. So there's certain things we want to make sure we're good at manufacturing: high tech, high value prescription drugs and technology. But to contemplate going to a place where we're going to back to the 50s and you're going to, you know, work for an auto manufacturer and the like, is something we've evolved beyond. So I don't know that we're building, you know, back America better. I think we're looking to, you know, with the proposals that are currently in place, we're looking to take a step backwards in terms of both our economic growth and productivity. So therefore, at some point in time, I think there's got to be a bit of an exit ramp for a lot of the proposals that are out there, especially on trade.
And then on government spending, very quickly, it just seems like with Elon Musk having the president's ear, that it's very much kind of the Silicon Valley ethos that we're going to go in there, disrupt things, and then something better is going to emerge on the other side.
Yeah, that maybe will be the case. I mean, politicians have long talked about waste in federal spending, and then we can certainly find where there is excess spending that is wasteful. But the danger with that is if you do a Silicon Valley style and break a lot of glass on the way, you may accidentally cut things that are extremely important. We've seen that in the first couple of weeks here. And it might be a good idea for Elon Musk to take a look over his shoulder and see how one of his publicly traded companies is doing today as well.
Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, why a greater number of people are turning to lab-grown diamonds.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A survey by the wedding site The Knot finds more than half of couples chose a lab-grown diamond for their engagement ring. We're joined by Paul Zimnisky, independent diamond industry analyst in New York. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And the technology of lab-grown diamonds is not some new exotic innovation. In fact, it's been around for a number of decades.
Right. So I guess the first thing I would note is that between a lab-grown and a natural diamond, there are differences. You know, with the manufactured lab diamond, it's, you know, we could theoretically produce, you know, as many as we want in the size, the color, the clarity. Whereas with the natural diamond, it was formed a billion years ago in the Earth's mantle. So it's a non-renewable natural resource, and we can physically tell the difference between the two, and that's why the prices are so different. Lab diamonds are a lot less expensive than a natural diamond.
And is that what makes it so attractive to couples getting engaged, is that the lab-grown diamond has a more affordable price point?
Yeah, so in cases, you can find a lab-grown diamond for, say, 90% less than an equivalent natural diamond if we're talking, like, say, unbranded generic diamonds. So the price point is significantly different, and I think that, yeah, that's attracting a lot of consumers to it. It's also relatively new that it's been available on a mainstream basis, so I think there's kind of a novelty and somewhat of a fad associated with it right now.
Now, Paul, I mean, this probably keeps you in business, is the fact that couples always rely upon a diamond ring to seal their engagement. But is the diamond still the far away undisputed champion of precious stones for engagement celebrations, or do couples look at different types of stones outside of diamonds?
Yeah, so I would say diamond is still the primary go-to. You know, if we're talking about a special gift like an engagement ring, you know, I think most people would prefer, say, a natural diamond that was formed a billion years ago that is rare and valuable rather than one that was just manufactured in a few weeks. So, you know, if you're thinking about a diamond, that's the way a lot of consumers think about it. But there are other manufactured gemstones if you're looking for something that's lower price point, like a moissanite, which is even less expensive than a lab-grown diamond, and in cases that, you know, can reflect light even better than a diamond. And there's colored manufactured gemstones like man-made ruby, emerald, sapphire. Those are really expensive these days. You can probably find one of them for under $100. So there's something for everybody, and there are a lot of options out there.
Now, I'm sure you can tell the difference between a diamond that was forged a billion years ago and one that was grown in a lab, but can the average person determine the difference between the two?
Yeah, you're gonna typically want a gem lab, a professional, to do that for you. The industry is making progress in this area, and there's a new machine on the market called Diamond Proof. And if you go to a jewelry store that has one of these, you can scan your diamond yourself and it will instantly tell you if it's a natural or not. So these are the sort of innovations that are happening in the industry.
Has the process of mining diamonds and refining them, has it improved over the decades? And I only ask because Mrs. Hart's engagement ring has a stone that's an heirloom. It came from my grandparents. So it was originally purchased in 1944. And how has the process of extracting diamonds and putting them into engagement rings, how has that improved over the past 80 years?
It's actually, you know, changing quite a bit. You know, technology is being implemented. There's a lot of automation happening with, you know, across from the exploration to the actual mining itself to the manufacturing. So it is changing. The diamond itself is still, you know, as it's always been, but the process to actually get it to the consumers is constantly evolving.
Paul Zimnisky, independent diamond industry analyst based in New York. Thank you for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. And still to come, a pair of stock picks from a money pro.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Hey, it's Stock Picker Monday, and joining us with a pair of investment ideas is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, Indiana. Find him online at horizoninvestment.com. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. Two selections today, two names that you might as well say are household names. And your first one, Chuck, I feel like, should we loop in Flo to back you up during this segment?
Well, you know, the Progressive, which is the company, the symbol is PGR, has certainly been flowing in the right direction here, given the fact that it is a bit of a defensive play in this market. It's been catching pretty nice bid here over the last few weeks as the overall market has been kind of dipping lower. Stock trades for about $282 a share. The company had a really strong beat in the December quarter. It has pricing power. Progressive's primary business is auto. It also has some property insurance as well. There's very nice price momentum going there. The company's net premiums written in the month of January, we're up 18% year over year. So it's had this really nice growth in premiums written. And finally, you know, you can buy the stock at less than 19 times its 2025 earnings. So, you know, still offers a reasonably good value in a fairly defensive area of the market. That's Progressive, $282 a share. PGR is the symbol.
And your next selection became one of the biggest companies in the world off of our vacation pictures.
Yeah, that's right. Meta, which has Instagram, it has a number of other platforms, but obviously the most common one is Facebook. You know, this is kind of at the other end of Progressive in a way. It's it's obviously a stock that's pulled back pretty sharply in line with a lot of the pullbacks in the Magnificent Seven stocks. But if you're if Meta's a stock that you've wanted to own and you're sitting there and you think you're going to be able to pick the exact bottom, you're probably not going to be able to. So I think the best you can do is, buy it when it's down. The stock is down 20%. Maybe it's going to go down 25 or 30%, but I think somebody can start to initiate a position in that stock at these levels. I like the stock's valuation. It trades at less than 24 times its 2025 earnings estimates, and the company has a strong record of consistently beating those estimates. I think you're going to see, double-digit growth in both earnings and sales this year and next. So, again, it's a company that's getting kind of caught up in the selling that we're seeing in those Magnificent Seven slash technology stocks. But, at some point, I think these stocks offer pretty good value. In the case of Meta, I think that point is now. So that's Meta. META is the symbol, trades for $590 a share. And our company and our clients own both of these stocks, Progressive and Meta.
The sell-off continues on Wall Street. Are we beginning? What's the Dow theory telling you, and how close are we getting to testing some new lows?
Yeah, we're very close. In the case of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, a close, and I emphasize close, below 41,938 would be a trigger for turning the Dow theory from bullish to bearish. We've already had the decline in the Dow Jones Transportation Average, so we're just waiting for that industrials to close below that level. It's not there yet, and sometimes the market comes down and bounces pretty strongly off those previous lows. But again, if you get a close below 41,938.45 in the industrials, the Dow theory would turn from bullish to bearish.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, Indiana. Find him online at horizoninvestment.com.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.